and welcome to episode 75 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we're talking about table flippers. Yes, today we'll be taking a closer look at the players that can take the game a little too seriously. Those that may get a little too upset when something doesn't go their way. It's a sensitive subject, but we're brave enough to tackle it, hopefully. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Gilljam, George Gier, and Adam Harrison. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh. I called you Josh, right?
I think so. Joe, John, I don't know. You can just, any J will work.
Really. Whatever. I'm Chris. This is Josh. Kitty's sitting across from me. I say this because as of yesterday, we became part of the Dice Tower Network.
This Hooray! Is huge news.
I know, right? I listen to the Dice Tower pretty regularly, like all the time, and lots of the offshoot podcasts as well. One of my favorites is the Stephen Bonacor Board Game Insider. So we'd like to thank Tom for making us part of the network, and we're proud to be part of the network.
Yeah, super excited. I mean, I didn't even know who Tom was like a year ago, but, you know, kind of going to the conventions and stuff. I mean, you go to conventions all the time, and you've spoken to him a number of times and kind of gotten to know him over the course of that. But for me, it was just like, oh, this is the guy who a lot of people listen to in the world of board gaming. So still kind of a new thing to me.
Yeah, so if you're new to the show, Josh is our noob of the podcast. Damn, 75 episodes in, but he's still working hard at being... You're not a noob anymore, but you're more on the outside of the board gaming hobby as opposed to, like, we suck you in.
He's casually part of the hobby.
Of the hobby.
Exactly.
I'm the obsessive one.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm the perfect medium one, right?
It really is.
I live
right there in, like, the 75 degree sunny spot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that in the second half of the show.
It's like North Carolina or something. Yeah. I don't know. That's my guess.
Yeah, so if you are new to the show, our format is pretty simple. At the beginning, the first 20, 25 minutes or so, we do feedback from past episodes. We do have a little announcements. I'm always kickstarting something, so I'll tell you what I kickstarted.
He's addicted.
I'm totally addicted. The last three episodes, well, this one and the previous two, each focus on a gamer trait of ours. Yes. Not necessarily a positive gamer trait.
Yes, it's kind of like our Achilles heel in gaming.
So it's kind of a trio of episodes of get to know Josh, Kitty, and Chris a little bit better.
And go deeper into our psychology and our past and our deepest, darkest nightmares.
So we're just going to jump right back into the whole announcement thing. Because, you know, just because we're part of the network doesn't mean we're changing anything. Gradually over time, little tweaks will be made, but that just happens anyway.
We're still going to be live to tape because, you know, editing's hard.
Editing's really hard.
It takes so much time,
It does. It's true. So live to tape, essentially, this is like a radio show for us. So we don't edit anything. There's nothing, you know, I might... bleep something. We've never really had to bleep anything, but
you bleeped me during our drinking games episode.
I did once.
We're very family friendly. We don't really need to use that.
In 75 episodes, I've had to go through and edit like six of them, I think. Yeah. And just minor
and you complained about every single one.
Well, yeah, I want you guys to understand that that's a lot of work for me when I do that.
I know. you do most of the work.
All right. I want to give a huge thank you to Chris Anderson on Board Game Geek. He did a mini badge for us. And I like what he did, and I'm like, well, let's see if we can make it a little bit similar to the logo. So I put one up there, and now it's kind of we're looking at both of them and weighing our options of like which one looks.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for Chris, we wouldn't have even thought about it. Yeah,
exactly. So I definitely want to give a shout out for Chris, regardless of which one we choose. But I do want to give everyone a chance to take a look at it. So there's a link in the show notes that goes directly to the Board Game Thread where you can see both of them. Just give me which one do you like best, and then at the end of the week we will put one of them up there on Board Game Geek and we can start getting badges for Tabletop Game Talk. Quick reminder, Gen Con registration is open. We will be there. For housing, all you have to do is have a badge before February 11th and you will get a time slot assigned to you at noon on February 11th, noon Eastern time, I believe. Hopefully you get a time frame within the first 2 hours, like from between 12 and 2 Eastern time. If you don't, then you're probably staying at a hotel that's like an hour down the road. And more like 15, 20 minutes, but still.
It's not so bad, though.
Nah, it's totally doable. It's totally workable. But if you do want to get in the housing block and get into that lottery, air quote lottery,
before the 11th,
and we'll give you more details of what we're going to do there as we get closer. So one of the benefits of being on the Dice Tower network is we get to be a presence at their booth. At the conventions. So you'll be able to, I believe everything after it happens. So after Gen Con, if you met me, then I will say it's true that you could meet us at, the Dice Tower booth. So anyway, might be getting ahead of myself. I don't know. we have a current contest. So again, if you're new, I'm going to do that just a couple more times. We love giving things away. I have too many things. I buy things, I want to give them away, or I buy things and I love them and I want to give a copy of them away.
And when you were moving, the guys were like, is this a board game store?
Yes. So I had more boxes of games than everything else combined.
Crazy.
It was, yeah, I agree.
To be fair, that's my family in books. Yeah. Everyone's got their thing.
Oh, yeah. You gotta collect something. If you're not a hoarder, then what are you doing with your life?
Exactly.
But this month, we're giving away... It's a monthly giveaway. This month, we're giving away Kingdom Death Monster. This is the big black box of Kickstarter fame. I think it made something like $18 million in backing. Ooh. This is just the base. It's just the $250 pledge. The story behind it is I opened the box. I saw I had to put together all the minis. I closed the box and we are now giving it away. So how do you enter? You email us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Just put January giveaway in the subject. In the body, you need to put your real name. Just let me know what your real name is. And let me know that you live in the continental U.S. Because this one especially is only available. I can only ship it in the continental U.S. If you're international and you want to enter, shoot me an email. I'm not going to say that you're going to win this. If I draw your name, we might give you something else. Maybe a t-shirt or a gift certificate or something. I'm kind of toying with ideas to not rule out the one third of my listening audience, that is outside the U.S. But if you are inside the U.S., just email us. And then if you put a show topic, and it's for this contest only, we are collecting show topics for the upcoming year. And if you put a show topic in there and we pick your show topic, you will also likely get a t-shirt. The only reason you wouldn't is if a bunch of people pick the same topic, then one person who picked that topic will get a t-shirt. Take a look at our back catalog at the types of topics we do and kind of come up with something that's different than that. It's okay to say revisit this topic or that topic, but I'm taking those as requests and not so much as entries. So
yeah. And that'll gain you an extra entry to the contest.
As well, yes.
Yes. Also, you kind of skipped over Capricorn.
Oh, yes. We're going to be at Capricorn. So if you are in Chicago and you want to hang out with me at Capricorn, which is in Wheeling, Illinois, February 15th through the 18th, shoot me an email and we'll set something up and we'll definitely play a game. I also skipped over the fact that if you're a patron of the show, you get automatic entry into all of our contests and you don't have to send me emails and you get bonus entries based on your level. So if you're interested in that, tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Okay, let's see. Kickstarter. We're making a good time. This is good.
You're blasting through it, Chris. I'm impressed.
I know. So typically last week I decided I'm only doing one Kickstarter a week. There was a couple Kickstarters that people recommended to take a look at, and then Tiny Epic Zombies pops up on my email, and I'm
you
like,
"You can't not get a Tiny Epic something."
I love right? Tiny Epic somethings.
You do. You love the Tiny Epic somethings.
And this one has not only the little item meeples, which are the plastic meeples that can like hold things, like, and this one is chainsaws and sawed off shotguns. Ooh. Yeah, little meeples that are holding chainsaws. Not only do you get that, you also get zombie meeples. Yeah, zombie meeples. And this game has 5 modes of play. So it has a cooperative mode. So you just all play together. That's great for us because, we fight. But or we can do cooperative versus the zombie player. So it's a 1v mini game. Or you can do competitive mode where they all play against each other, or competitive versus the zombie, which is double competitive, I think.
Wow.
I know. And then there's a solo mode on top of that. And it's a Tiny Epic game, and pretty much all of them have been great. Even Tiny Epic Defenders, which I didn't like the first edition, but I think the second edition is going to fix all that for me. So, yeah. The base game is only $20, $25 for the deluxe.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Like, how can you not do this?
The Tiny Epic game series is they're great.
Yeah. Tiny Epic Quests. So
easy
fun.
To bring with you. Yeah. So great to toss in a bag.
Yeah, so. These are my work games. Like, well, actually, they're games that I bring just about everywhere because they are so easy to carry around. But they're games that, like, if you want to start up a work group, it's very small footprint when they're in the box, but they're a full actual game.
Yeah, it's a real game. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So now let's get into some feedback.
Indeed. Well, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. The first one is from Jason Marks. He says, I had a similar problem to you, speaking about the buying too many games episodes we had just previously. He says, my method of cutting it back is now, instead of backing right away, I hit follow button, so it gives me a notification in the last 48 hours. He's talking about Kickstarter. He apparently has 188 backed.
I will beat you. I mean, sorry about that.
Wait.
it's not a competition, Chris.
I kind of want to know now. Like, what do you know roughly what your number would probably
be? I think I have like 166.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so I'm close.
Okay, so he's beating you currently.
Yeah.
I usually find the time lets me get away from impulse buying, and I have had far fewer Kickstarter disappointments as a result. This way, I can see what's unlocked, look at comments, read the BGG comments on it, and generally be more informed. When on Amazon's, etc., I will put things in my cart, and I give myself 1 week before actually purchasing, unless I went online specifically to get it. This way, I can think on it and talk myself out of it. The comment made in the episode about you being smart enough to talk yourself into things, oh God, I can't believe we were so kind, is totally true, but it can work the other way around as well.
Yeah, I love the fact that I got so much advice, but this one is good. And yeah. The 48-hour follow, I would recommend that to anyone who's new to Kickstarter. And we'll have another one email that kind of goes with this. But if you are new to Kickstarter, click that follow, because if a game is good enough, if it's getting enough buzz, it will get a look at the number of backers versus the number of like amount of money. The backers is much more important, not the percent funded. The percent funded can be really skewed by basically where they set the number at. But it is a good thing to say, okay, I'm going to get all of these, you know, stretch goals. I'm going to get all of this stuff, all this stuff. It's why all the Kickstarters shoot up drastically in the last 48 hours for this reason. Jason also was the one who won our Massive Darkness contest, and he gave me some pointers as to how to make the game a little bit more fun. He says, first, instead of putting all the little, you know, minion minis on the board, just use some kind of cube as hit points, which I think makes a lot of sense. Like, I have a lot of, you know, component stacks, so it makes that easier. Also, he recommends higher player counts for Massive Darkness, because he says it's one of the games where as the player counts go up, so do the hit points, so you can start working with each other and building better strategies. It makes the game more interesting. So thanks, Jason, for those tips.
All right, so we have an update from Rusty. Rusty is one of our listeners who he wrote into us a while ago. His wife was in the hospital. They were looking for good games to play in the hospital, and he has an update on their baby Lincoln finally came home from the NICU after 90 days. He was born at 1 pound 13 ounces, 12 inches long. He's now 7 pounds 2 ounces, 19 inches long. He's doing great, and it's wonderful to be under the same roof finally. We still have a long journey ahead, many doctor's appointments, but we have been incredibly blessed. Thank you so much for all of your support. And then a special note to me, he's very excited for us and wishing me a wonderful delivery. So.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we mentioned, if this is your first episode, Kitty is like 12 months pregnant right now.
I think that's impossible, Chris.
Well, if you look at it, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's basically
39 weeks.
39.
It's 1 week off of my like due date. Yeah.
Wow.
Kitty
could be giving birth at any moment now.
Yeah, we even moved it forward. Super considerate to plan this episode all about my habit, like 1 week before my due date. I was like, are we sure that this is a good idea? But here, I'm here.
We're making it work.
Yeah. We're good.
So
we made it.
Yeah, if on an episode in the very near future we replace Kitty with, you know, the baby, then that's why. She's tired. Baby can
fill in.
He can fill your role just fine.
Oh, yeah. He can manage. He's really smart already, I can tell.
Yeah, yeah. All the hiccups.
We've got another one from Sam. He says, I had never kickstarted a game till I began listening to you guys last year or so.
Uh-oh, sorry, Sam.
Chris, what have you done? And now I'm in the midst of also receiving a deluge of games that I don't know if I have the time to play. Oh, goodness. Chris, you've really done a number on this guy.
I know.
Getting all these games now has made me become more particular about doing the research before I back.
Yeah, so... and then... as part of that, he also referred, hey, Chris, have you took a look at this Kickstarter, Nemesis? So I did look at it, but I had already backed my Tiny Epic Zombies. But if you're interested, Nemesis is kind of like the Aliens movies in board game form. Ooh. So it does look pretty interesting. But I like what Sam said here is like, once you start receiving these, because I started like really backing a lot of games when we started doing the podcast, and now I'm just getting tons of them. In fact, Sydney, my wife, she just texted me saying, hey, more packages, and she sent me pictures of them. So you start looking at these and you're like, oh, I really want to play that. I really want to play that. I really want to play that. And then it's like, but I have something that's like this, and I have something that's like that. And does, and I think he has a point here where the more you get, the more you kind of think, maybe I should just hesitate a little bit on the Kickstarter thing. So the 1 week, one Kickstarter a week, that's going to work for me.
Nice.
All right. We have some more advice about slowing down your game purchases from Steve. I would suggest setting a cap on how many unplayed games you can have at a time, like 10. I would suggest that because the real problem is that you don't like the games that... All right, let me try that again. I would suggest that because the real problem isn't that you don't like the games you get. Well, I'm sure sometimes it is, but the real problem is you're buying more new games than you can learn and get people to play. So by connecting how many games come into your collection to how many new games you play, you can still do what you enjoy, learn new games, play a great variety of games, but you will never get more games than you can play. By doing this and limiting the number of games you get rid of without ever playing.
This is honestly the best advice that I've heard.
Does one hit you?
Yeah. Like this one just makes a lot of sense because I have, like, last week I said I was going to, you know, post on Twitter my gaming shelves, and I'm going to do that. I do have to clean them first, but that by the time this episode posts, everything should be good. And you can go on Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK and you can see a picture of my shelves and what's in my collection. But I also plan on putting red sticky notes on all the games I haven't got a chance to play. So like I can look at it and say, okay, here's all these red sticky notes. I should go play those. I like this idea of saying this is like it's your intake is based on how many games you have left that you haven't played. Well, whatever Steve said, he said it way better than I did. But I just like the idea of having a maximum number of red sticky notes.
Right.
Yeah. And I can't bring a new game in unless I get take one of those red sticky notes off.
That's a great idea, yeah.
So I'm definitely going to use this.
It's still so tricky with Kickstarter, though, because of the delay.
So Kickstarter doesn't count. Kickstarter is just going to be a parallel trend.
Okay.
It'll just be one per week. You're
just
going
to have a separate section for Kickstarter games?
Yeah.
So that means like part of your convention prep is going to be like purging all the sticky notes.
Making sure I play all those games
before
I go to conventions, which is great. I love forcing myself to play games because
it's true.
I didn't get
these
games.
They really get to the table then.
Yeah. I didn't get these games because I didn't want to play them. Steve also, he promised that he would, and he did. He wrote a review of First Martians, which is a really good review. It's up on BGG. There's also a link in the show notes. So if you want to take a read, he's making me look at it in a different way. I should probably play the campaign. I think I've already given it away in a big box of games, but maybe I'll have to go buy it again. I'm not going to do that. Steve, if we ever meet, bring First Marches and I will play it with you.
Nice. Well, we've got one from Michael Knight. He says, I really enjoyed your episode on not buying games. While I do not buy anywhere near as many games as Chris, I have a limited budget and space in which to store games. As I listened to the episode, I began to analyze why I purchase games, the games that I do. One of my problems is collection. If I get a game, I want to then be sure to get all the expansions. This happened when I started out with X-Wing by Fantasy Flight Games. I ordered the starter set on Black Friday a couple of years ago. By Christmas, I had a dozen expansions by snatching them up when they went on sale on Amazon. They added up quickly. The same was with Star Wars Imperial Assault. I have not yet got through the entire campaign of the base set and have several expansions. I was afraid if I didn't get it when it came out, I would miss out.
Yeah, so this is actually very, very similar to me. Like just buying, I want to be the completionist. Like Living Card Games, I only will do one. And right now I'm doing Star Wars. I have to buy a new pack every month, but that's okay. It's just one game. And I do enjoy that game. It doesn't hit the table as often as it justifies buying a pack every month, but it satisfies that completionist in me.
Right.
One of the things I do want to mention, I like what Michael's saying here, where we were just talking, like, last episode was a lot of talking about me and my compulsive need to buy games. But why do we talk about these topics? It's really just to get people thinking, right? It's
yeah.
Like a different viewpoint. I think the analysis paralysis episode, we had a lot of people like, wow, this just really made me look at this differently and think about it differently. So, Michael, I'm glad that we gave you something to think about. He does go on and explains the exact same issues I have with Kickstarter because his addiction to Kickstarter. But he finally ends with, thanks for another great episode. I look forward to each Tuesday to get the latest episode. Hope all goes well with Kitty and the birth of her new baby. Children change your life for the better. Start playing games early.
Of course.
So.
Oh, yeah. There's no worry in that department.
All right. So we've got a comment from Aaron on BGG about analysis paralysis. On page 28 from the Scythe base game rulebook, the delay of game variant says that if a player delays the game while the game is being played, not during game end scoring, for more than 10 seconds by trying to calculate the final score, they lose 2 popularity. Just wanted to point out that in some games, battling AP is a part of the rules.
Oh, yeah.
I've not seen it in a ton of games, but I have seen it in like those point salad games where if you're trying to calculate, sometimes that'll be a penalty if like, oh, I'm calling you on it.
Well, if you're trying to like, you shouldn't be calculating on your turn. You've got like 5 other player turns
exactly.
to calculate right. that.
Yeah.
That's especially in Scythe. It's so crazy complicated to try to figure out everyone's score. If you're doing that on your turn, you're really slowing down the game.
Yep. One of the things I really like about Scythe, though, and actually Great Western Trail, is it Great Western Trail? I think so.
The one with all the cattle?
Yeah, that is the one with all the cattle. I'm trying to think if the turns go really fast in that one, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So both of those games, the turns go very quickly. So on your turn, like in Scythe, you only have 4 actions you can choose from because you have 5 on the board and you can't choose the same one twice. So you have a very limited selection. And then Great Western Trail is kind of the same way where, you know, you can only go to maybe one, two, or three different spaces.
They're both really good games at kind of combating that because I remember playing Scythe and not being the AP player. Like, even though I am, like in a lot of games, it didn't happen in Scythe.
Yep.
Whereas there was a lot to think about, but you know, like you said, they just manage it really well.
Yeah, you have a limited number of choices, and then it just takes the selection set down. Yeah, I like this. We also got a comment from Kellen Lee commenting on AP. He thinks that Josh could really benefit from looking up the rules or watching videos ahead of time. And they use a timer for their AP player, and they say it works out pretty well. They do use the timer for everyone.
Yeah, so. I'm still on the fence about the timer. I completely agree about the video and the rules, but yeah, the timer. Someone else commented last week that like it can cause a lot of paralysis, and I've definitely.
I think
that.
It depends a lot on the person.
Okay, yeah. So I was thinking about this. What if it's not a timer? What if it's a stopwatch where you just are aware of how much time you've taken?
Yeah. Like a count up.
Like there's no penalty for like it's counting down. Now you only have 10 more seconds to make your, like that can like freeze you.
Yeah.
But if you're just watching a stopwatch and you're like, oh man, it's been 5 minutes. Now it's time. Like I really need to just do
something.
I think that would work.
Yeah. If everyone had one as well.
Yeah.
And you didn't just put it on one person.
Yeah. It's kind of like the chess clock for gaming.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Because it just moves up. It doesn't count you down. It doesn't buzz. There's no like, ah!
And honestly, even if you just use that as the tiebreaker, you know, it's like that whoever took the less time, that's the person who breaks the ties.
Yeah.
You know, so you could replace tiebreaker rules with that. And that would like, it gives a little bit of element of I should go a little bit faster because I want to be ahead in the tiebreaker thing. But if I think longer, I still get my points. But people are still watching the amount of time. And if you're like, oh, we played for 2 hours and 80 minutes of it was me, then that kind of like is an awakening thing too.
Opens your awareness, I guess.
Sure.
All right, we do have a quick question. We're going to skip this because we're running a little long. So Jason, we will do your question next week, I promise. but in the meantime, we are going to press this button. It's going to play music and then Josh is going to talk. You'll see, it's easy.
Yeah, In this episode, we're talking about table flippers. In other words, it's Kitty's turn to be on the hot seat as we look into what triggers her emotional responses during gameplay. So, with just a touch of fear and hesitation, let's get started.
Now, this was Kitty's idea to have this episode.
Yeah, it was. And yep. And I think, you know, we've all done, you know, I did my analysis paralysis, you did your buying games thing, and it is very like, it's almost like we're all doing like a therapy session here. And
a
like,
little
bit. It's Kitty's turn to be on the couch. So Kitty, tell us about your mother.
Well, I actually, to follow up on that, because I don't know of a time you've ever actually flipped the table. You've never done it with us.
Oh, no.
But have you ever actually flipped the table?
Okay.
Or board. Or anything like similar.
I have thrown pieces.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Active pieces you needed for the game?
Yeah.
Okay. That counts.
Like, just picked up a handful of, like, whatever was in front of me and, like, thrown it at the wall behind the other player. I've never thrown pieces at a person, though.
It's all fun and games until someone loses an eye.
To be fair, that was a long time ago. I don't think I've done it. I was very bad as a child with my table flipping and piece throwing and just like getting up and stomping away from the table. But as I have grown, I think I've aged out of this a little bit. Maybe I can give some insight into.
Well, you have less tantrums, but you do get emotionally
I do still
shaken.
Get emotionally involved.
Yeah.
And I can understand that. I mean, I do actually suffer from this a little too, because we're both very competitive when we play games, especially the ones that are competitive in nature.
Yeah. And just to throw me in the loop too, because we were talking just before this. So we try not to talk about the subject before the mics get turned on, but every once in a while. Because in a competitive game, I rarely get emotional. The only time that I actually get emotional is if the whole table is like ganging up on me for a, like just for the sake of ganging up on me. And that emotion.
It's a good tactic if you're playing Chris. Well, it's pretty good.
Sure. But that emotion is just saying, okay, fine, I'm not going to win. So it's sort of a, fine, I give up. You know, right. You guys got me. Go ahead and play your game and I'll do my turn when it's my turn. But that's rare.
Well, the thing that Kitty brought up was the fact that you get very emotional when we're playing cooperative games,
yes.
When you disagree with people's ideas about what our next move should be.
Yeah,
because you can be the alpha player in those games, and that's when you get emotional.
Yeah. So my day job is making decisions, right? That's what I do. I'm like a technology manager, and my people are asking me all the time, "What should we do? What should we do?" And it's my impulse just to make decisions very quickly, and this makes sense to me, and this is how we should do it. So when there is that competition, such as Pandemic Legacy Season 2, where it's like, where do we do our upgrades?
People who work with Chris, you need to push back on him a bit more. He's clearly not used to it, having us like challenge his ideas.
Because last week we were standing like almost like forehead to forehead, just like, oh!
Oh, yeah.
We both had very strong opinions. And I don't think we did either of them.
No, suddenly.
I think Spencer came up with an idea.
He did.
Yeah, and we were like, yeah, let's just do that.
Yep. And Spencer's like, well, what if we did this and this? And Kitty and I are like, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. But when you are up against something like you feel so passionately about.
So that was last week. Yeah. What were you feeling? So you had a recommendation, and we won't go into the recommendation because A, we don't want to spoil it. And B,
secrets.
I don't remember the exacts. But it was something about putting two stickers on two cards, or one sticker on one card and one sticker on another card, or what cards we were going to put stickers on.
We were picking a city, basically. Yeah. And I had one city in mind and you had a different city in mind. I feel like we try to make decisions as a group. So I was trying to like persuade the group, but like Josh and Spencer were both just like, we don't care. You had a very different opinion from mine. That I felt like had some flaws, and I feel like I get very frustrated when I feel like I'm not being heard.
Okay.
Right.
So sometimes I would start to say my piece, and then like if you would like, well, that doesn't matter. Like you would just like dismiss my point before I even felt like I got to make it all the way.
Mm. Oh, we're turning this around on me now. No, I feel bad.
No, I hadn't thought about that, but that's a good point.
Well, no, because I also have the tendency to like reiterate things a lot, and it can take up a lot of time, and it's not your job to like, care for my emotional well-being while we make
a
fairly trivial decision.
I assure you, I knew exactly what two cards you wanted to put the stickers on.
Yeah.
At all times.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's like two lawyers in a courtroom. You know, it's like you have two very different ideas of what should happen or did happen. And you're just like, you're not going to concede an inch. You know, you're just like, no, this is the way I see it. Like, you know, and you did a good job of explaining it. I think it was just Chris had a completely different view.
Well and yeah, and at one point I'm like, I was willing, like, I think this is the better move, but I am not going to veto your move. So right. Let's go ahead and do right, that.
Right, exactly.
And I think I had the same stance, and we were just at this like stalemate.
You never wanted to do what I wanted to do.
No. But I have learned to be willing to do what you do, and then get to I told you so you later.
That
feels
true.
Really good. That's I really nice. Enjoy a good I told you so.
Yeah, going back to the sort of childhood thing, like I remember like having a lot of competition with my siblings really started it. Like video games for me was where it began. We'd be playing like Street Fighter and I would just lose it if I kept getting crushed. And I'd just like you throwing the controller at the TV or at my brothers. Like
I think that's most of where it comes from in a competitive game is when you feel like you're not in the game anymore, especially. Or you feel like everyone's ganging up on you, or you had a strategy and somebody just like completely messes up your strategy and it feels like they didn't even have a strategy and they just like took yours out and that was their whole thing and now right. They're gonna win not because they did a good thing, but because they ruined what you were doing.
Right.
When you guys go into playing a game, do you expect that you're going to win? Like, do you play the game because you think that you can win this game?
I don't think I'm expecting it. Like, I know I'm going to win. It's more like my desire to win is very high. That's all it is. It's just like, it's like this really juicy prize. I'm like, I have to have it. You know, it's my precious. I must have the golden cup.
Yeah, I never expect to win, but I always really want to win.
Because I always expect to not win. Like any game I ever start, I always expect to not win. And I've said this many times, especially when you're playing a new game. I never play to win the first time I play a game. If I do win, that's great. Like, yay, I won. But I never, ever think about winning when I'm playing a game. I just, you know, I'm just kind of in the moment. And if it happens, it happens. I wonder, but it sounds like when you guys play a game, that is what you're focused on. Like, why play the game if you're not going to play to win?
I think as we play more games, it's easier for me to just play for like the fun of learning and playing the game. If I'm playing a game more than once, though, then I want to win.
Okay.
Like if I'm learning a game, I can like take that step back, not worry about it as much. But yeah, like otherwise, why play a competitive game if you're not trying to win?
Well, yeah, it's like, why even score it? You know, like when in the analysis paralysis thing where we're talking about how, you know, I was taking so long and it was because I, you know, really cared about the game and I really wanted to do well. And it was like, oh, we could just not score the game and that would cut out my competitiveness and my sort of emotions around that. But then, you know, it's kind of why you even have the score. It's like, well, this is what we're doing. We're working towards being the best player on the board. Like to me, and I imagine you as well, Kitty, it's just like, but yeah, why are we even doing this then if it's not to like get the most points.
So do you enjoy the emotional roller coaster of needing to win or wanting to win? Not necessarily needing, but wanting to win. Do you enjoy that emotional roller coaster that you're feeling as the game sways your way or away from your way?
That's a tough one.
I enjoy it within like one standard deviation of sway. But once you get out into the second standard deviation, it's like, I can't handle this. That's where I think I start getting the like emotional, like, if it's super swingy where like one second I think I'm winning and the next second I'm losing and I can't keep track of it all, like that freaks me out. Or if I just feel like there's no chance anymore, I think that's when I get at my worst.
I would say yes. So let's flash back a little bit to a game the two of you were playing, and I just happened to sadly be in the game as well.
Little you game, loved it, Chris. You loved it.
A little game called Blood Rage.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this incident. Yeah.
Yes. So I'll set it up. We're playing Blood Rage, great game by Eric Lang. territory control-ish type of thing. And you have Vikings and you're trying to control territories and really you're trying to get glory. Typically that means dying, but sometimes it means taking monsters, putting them on the board, and destroying all the figures in a particular territory. If all those figures happen to be someone's and that person, someone was trying to get a particular quest that meant, hey, have figures in this, or get a bunch of points for having figures there, and the monster comes in and completely destroys your strategy, Kitty, at that moment, you were mad.
I was very angry. Because not only was it that I got points for everyone in that territory at the end of the game, I also got points for everyone killed in Ragnarok. And so it was like double points that I lost. And not only did I do this once during this game, I did it twice. I let him get me twice.
So let's focus on the first one, because I think we're going to talk about both.
The first one was a surprise.
Yeah. Well, in the first one, you were really mad.
I was like, very angry.
Yeah. Why did you go there? You destroyed my entire strategy. I have no chance of winning. Like, these were the feelings you were feeling at the time.
Yes. Especially because I felt like you, Chris, had a lot of points. And there were other places where this monster could have gone. And that, yeah, like, Josh might have picked up one more point by doing this to me than doing it to a territory where it affected both of us. So it felt a little bit more personal than if, you know, it was a bad thing that happened to multiple people. It just felt like it was happening to me for like one extra point for Josh. And I was like, there was nothing I could do about it. And it was just very frustrating. And I was like, now me and Josh both, because like Josh was really far behind, as I recall.
Yeah, I think so.
And he did this. And I was like, well, now Chris is just going to win. Like, you could have you could have balanced the playing field more. But no, you went for like, it was your best move for you.
Yeah, and I wasn't, yeah, obviously, I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just thinking about optimal moves.
Yeah.
But I totally get where you're coming from. I remember playing, you know, the Star Trek game with Chris and Jen. And it was a similar thing. I just got like crushed in the middle of them. And I was just like, oh, I just felt so out of it. And I think there's an element to it where you just, it feels so personal, not only getting crushed by other people, but like if you're really far behind everyone, or you just completely get wiped out of the game. I don't know. I just take it personally. Like, oh, I'm so bad at this game.
Especially when it's like one move that wipes you out of the game too. You know, if it's like, oh, I picked a poor strategy here. Right. Also, it was the first time I played the game, so I didn't know what all the monster powers were. I didn't know that there was, you know, Josh puts this piece on the board and it kills me. Like, I didn't know that that was happening the first time.
So let's jump to the second time. So Blood Rage is played in three ages. This happened in the second age.
Yes.
In the third age, you still had the same quest cards, you still had the same abilities, and you still had the same strategy, which was put all of your guys in that same territory.
I thought that he had already played it. But he hadn't.
Now, you weren't upset that second time. The second time you were like,
I was less upset because it was my own fault. I could have seen what was if I had been paying attention, I knew what the monster could do. I knew what Josh's move would be in that case. I had seen it all before. That was on me.
So going now, that's the symptom, right? That's what we're seeing. And I think we agree sort of that if you really are emotionally invested in winning, you are emotionally invested in the game. And if something goes against you that's going to take you away from being able to win, that heightens those emotions.
Yeah.
In the same way we're talking about, you know, Josh and how do we handle your AP and me and how do I handle my obsessive buying habits, how do we handle emotions, like kind of leveling that out when you go into a game? Because you hate take that games.
I do.
Mostly.
So I generally try not to play them.
Except that Risk is one of your favorite games.
So Risk is so long term and there's so much luck involved. There's so much dice that it doesn't feel like, yeah, sure, you're attacking people, but you know, it makes sense that they're attacking you. It's the whole game is to be attacked and you can do things to defend yourselves and there's strategies to protect against that. But games where, I don't know.
I hate Munchkin.
Is just the worst so, for me.
So take that, games that essentially the game focuses around you knocking other players down so that you can climb up. Munchkin being a very, very popular, probably one of the most known take that games of all. I would never want to play Munchkin with you because we talked, and this is an episode probably, I don't know, 30, 40 episodes ago. We were talking about how Josh and I, when we're playing a game with you, we will change our strategy because we don't want you to get upset. So we might do something that's a little subpar if it's not going to make Kitty mad.
And that really, like, hearing you guys say that made me really consider what I bring to the table. And you don't want to be that person where, like, oh, I make it not fun for other people to play with me.
Yes.
And so I've really worked on myself of, like, recognizing when these things are happening, taking stock of, like, my emotions during a game, and just, like, taking a deep breath and being like, it's just a game still. Like, you know, take that step back, especially if we're playing for the first time. Give myself the, I'm not trying to win, I'm just trying to learn experience. And the more laid back. But when we're playing a game super competitively, still, I still get caught up in it.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, even remember, like, you know it. And I, you know, recognized it when you guys said about the AP thing when we played that game. But it's like, you know, you get, and I even told myself at the start, okay, I'm not going to win this game. Don't get sucked into trying to win. And then halfway through, it just happened. And I didn't, almost like imperceptibly. And suddenly I care about the game and I want to do every move optimally. And it's just like, wow, how did that happen? I told myself at the beginning I wasn't going to do this. And I did it anyway.
It's when you feel like you're going to win. Yeah. I think, like, when you have that taste of, like, oh, I'm doing really well, it just, like, it feeds the inner competitive monster.
Oh, totally.
You get that little spark of hope, and then you, like, well, I'll just get a little bit more emotionally invested in this because I feel like I'm going to win. And then when it's ripped away, it's the worst.
Oh, man.
So I like the emotional investment. I think that part is healthy. You know, it's sort of like we're I've heard it referred to as, like, the circle of trust. When you're playing a game, you are all going into the game. That's the same boundaries. You're playing by the same rules, and you're in that world. That world's a whole different place. So it makes sense to have some emotions in that world, right? Like, that, there's no rules against not being emotional. However, the one emotion that is the problem, I think, is anger. It's the one where you're mad at someone for doing something that affected you. Like, being, like, frustrated or disappointed or, oh, man, I can't believe you did that, because but not being angry at that person,
right.
I think that's okay. Right. If it's like, Josh, why did you do that? It was the worst thing you could do. Now my strategy, and then you're throwing your hands up. That's the part that makes it, like, more uncomfortable and awkward.
Yeah, you've directed it at a person. And I think where I used to come from was I would think I could talk them out of it. Even though it's a move that's already been done, like, you know, I felt like I still had some sort of control in the issue. Like, no, but if you had just done this to Chris instead, or if you had just done this other thing, we could have all had so much more fun and more points.
Like, it's so funny because it's very metagaming. Yeah, it's very metagaming, isn't it? In a way. I mean, you know, you might not even have been aware at the times that you did them, and that's what you're doing, but I guess you're reflecting back and seeing.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do that. Sometimes it's tongue in cheek. Sometimes it's just casual.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Josh, that would be a good move to go right there for you.
Oftentimes
I'm actually being legit and saying that would be a good move. If you're having a hard time making a decision, I might be just, you know, helping you. But other times I might be like, that might be a good move for you. And you did something. It doesn't directly benefit me, but it doesn't hurt me, because had you gone in that other spot, that would have hurt me.
Yeah, so, I've seen you do that a ton of times. It's funny that when you put words to it, it's like, oh, yeah, I have seen you do that a ton. Like, yeah, you can be quite Machiavellian in that way.
Well, it's just, you know, subtle hints to help you guide you in the right spot before the action.
Right.
If it fails, then it's like, okay, I failed before the action. You know, you made the move I didn't want you to make, because now I have to decide on a different strategy. But yeah, it's there's nothing wrong with trying to guide other people. And there's nothing wrong with pointing out. It's like, hey, Josh, Kitty's going to win in two turns if we don't block her from doing this. Now, that can make somebody very angry. There are people out there that's like, you shouldn't tell someone that.
Yeah.
But
I've been in that situation as well. Like, I remember back in London when I was first getting into the scene, and that exact situation. I was like, hey, we can stop her from winning. Like, and someone was like, I don't like that way of playing. And this was like one of the first times I was getting to ball game. I didn't even really understand what he was getting at, but this is exactly what you're talking about. It's like, yeah, she should be allowed to win. You know, you shouldn't be pointing out to other people what they can do to stop. It's not a co-op. It's not one versus many.
I see, and I don't know. And
right.
I'm literally, figuratively, literally on the fence about this.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think that if there is public knowledge on the board that everyone can see, there is nothing wrong with reminding people about what's there. If you knew that this particular person had a card and that card, when they played it, is going to give them the game. And the reason you know the game, they have the card, is because you happen to see them draw it and it wasn't supposed to be information you had. That's cheating. That crosses a line. But I think pointing out public knowledge is okay.
I think as long as you're pointing out to the group as a whole, or just like even making observations about like what's going on the board, like, oh, hey, look at this. But if you say like specifically, Josh, you need to make this move next or this is going to happen. Like if you're making it very specific of what that feels like alpha player, that feels.
Sure. Someone's trying to like.
Yeah. Yep. And especially if Josh, if you do this and stop her from winning, now you're going to win, Chris, because you pointed that out.
But that's sort of what we are always doing, right? Is we want the other players to make moves that help us more than it helps our opponents. So sometimes we meta that in early. So it's tricky because, like, if you always did that, I'm always playing, every time I play a game, Josh is just checking to make sure that any move made is the least optimal for me. And Josh is always pointing out, so this one's going to help Chris the least, and this one's not going to be, if you go here, that's going to help Chris a lot. And then you said that for every single person. That is probably going to get frustrating to me.
good to know. I have a little ace up my sleeve now if I need it. No, I wouldn't do that to you. Interesting podcast I listened to recently. I want to say it was Freakonomics, and they were talking about the headwinds, tailwinds kind of economic psychology theory. And the idea is that people always notice when things are going bad against them, and then they don't notice when things are going really well for them. So, you know, this really comes into play in this kind of like angry, frustrated player thing. You know, obviously, of course you're going to notice when someone brings their troll in and kills all your men, but you probably didn't notice the three or four moves they made before that might have hurt the other player, because you just weren't even paying attention too much to them hurting the other player. Like, you didn't really care that much. So we always notice those times when things are going against us, and it just feels like, oh, the
world is always against me. Yeah, exactly. It's always against me. It's never against Josh. It's never against Chris.
Yes.
You're always ganging up on me. Yeah, but no, we gang up on Chris all the time too. And that's part of, you know, one of my strategies. Is
and actually,
really watch the board, see what's really happening.
Right.
And I don't actually mind. I actually like, again, because I don't really, so if I'm not playing to win, what am I playing for? And I don't think I've mentioned this for a long time, but I know I've mentioned it at some point. I love discovering rule systems. I love the rule systems. I love discovering strategies. I typically, in a game, will not play the same strategy twice. So if I find a winning strategy, I'm not going to play that strategy again because I've already won. That one's been expended. I want to find the next strategy. So anytime I play, as long as I can be satisfied with the strategy that I tried to play was, you know, a successful attempt, that's what's fun for me. I don't need to win. I'm just like, oh, look at all these points I got. Look at all the glory I got by combining these three cards in Blood Rage. And I've never played that strategy again. I've been trying to find other combinations that will get me to win. So that's why I play where... So when you're trying to gang up on me, I'm like, all right, well, let's see if the strategy can handle that ganging up.
Right.
Know, does it fit?
He's letting us gang up on him. This is good fun.
I don't think I have a choice not to let.
Well, yeah. And this kind of goes back to, you know, your old story of playing as a child Monopoly over a summer with one kid who just creamed you all the time. Like he would crush you every time. And you said that it would kind of like forge that feeling of like, oh, I know I'm going to lose, losing is fine. It's just part of the equation. So how else am I going to get fun out of this? It's a good lesson to learn. You know, I wish I could be more like you. But.
Well, don't do that. You don't want to be. But there is something to be said from losing from or learning from losing.
Yes.
Like we learn far more from losing than we do from winning.
I will never be taken out by that troll again.
Exactly. So
scorched in your memory.
So no matter what, if you lost, as long as you're taking away something, you know, I'm going to lose, but I'm watching what Josh is doing, and wow, that was a brilliant strategy. Photosynthesis that we talked about episodes ago. Watching Josh play has changed the way I will play that game in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Because he destroyed us.
killed us.
And it was okay that I lost, because like the next time I play, I'm going to be much better and be able to like try a better strategy. So yeah. Now we gave some tips for like the AP player. We gave some tips for you know, buying. What about, and I like your perception, where you notice only notice when something bad happens to you. What if you had like a stack of green and red cubes? And every time something good happened to you, you just pull a green cube. Like, you, that was an awesome move. Pull a green cube. Oh, something bad happened to me. All right, pull a red cube. Do you think that'd be interesting to see, like, at the end of a game, especially like a Take That game? Because Take That is back and forth, back and forth, back yeah. and forth. Do you think having that pile of cubes where at the end you can kind of compare, it's like, see, I have 57 red cubes and you only have 30 and you have 20. You guys were totally ganging up on me. Do you think that would be...
Maybe.
I think it could be like a fun experiment, like yeah. a couple times, but it's not how I want to play games forever.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know? But my tips for the emotional player would more be along the lines of like, be careful what games you pick.
Yeah.
Know your trigger games. And if you have like other emotional players that are willing to put up with you, or... really good caring friends, you know, play with those people. But, you know, that's not the, oh, we're having a board game party. Like, how can I offend all of my friends and make them never want to do this again? Those are the, you know, don't pull that game out.
If you are the emotional player, while you're being emotional, just try to acknowledge that you are being emotional. And if you can, if you're in the moment and you're like, I know I'm being furious and over emotional, stop for a moment and say, look, I understand I'm being over emotional and I'm really upset about this, but that's not going to stop me because you did this and you did, because that actually helps like break the yeah. ice a little bit. It loosens the tension. Yeah. Like if you're acknowledging you're emotional, everyone at the table would be like, okay, at least she knows she's insane. That's important.
I think that has become one of my strengths, is like, I know that, all right, I just need like 5 minutes to be mad about this. You guys keep playing. I'm going to sit over here and be mad. I'm not mad at either of you. I'm mad at the board. I'm mad at myself. I am a little bit mad at Josh, but I'll get over that. You know, it's, I'm picking on each
no,
other.
No, it's fine. You are better.
It was such a great example.
It really is. And you are really much better at doing that. Like, you definitely call out at the beginning of your frustrating, like, sentence, okay, yeah, that was the best move for you, but God, oh, I can't believe
it.
I can't
deal with it right now. I'm just going to take, like, 3 moves, and then I'll be back in the game and talk to you guys again.
I'm just going to preface all of my moves that I take that are, like, not all of them are slightly bad, but anything that's devastating. Kitty, you're still one of my best friends, but I have to do this to you.
You've done that to me a couple times. It's true.
All right. I want to get to a post on the BGG forums, because Michael Olive's incredibly good stuff. So if you want to read this, tabletopgametalk.com/BGG, that goes to our podcast page on BoardGameGeek. And I am trying to do and have done for pretty much the last 40 some episodes, have a input/feedback thread for all of our episodes.
And you do that ahead of time as well, before we actually do the episode. Yeah. So people can contribute.
Right. And that's the part I need to make sure that I'm always doing it ahead of time, because every once in a while I forget. And then I put it up like 2 days before we record, or a day before we record. But anyway, this one actually came up a little late. So, but Michael's post was worth it all together. So Michael, and this is verbatim from the thread. I think it's just great in general, so I don't want to lose anything here. My youngest daughter has had this problem for years. She is 13 now, and we have been gaming with her for going on 6 years. It was a struggle at first. In the beginning, we had to stop games entirely and have her sit out while the family picked another game to play. I was trying to discourage this behavior and not ruining game night with my older daughter and wife. After a few times of this, she started to take the hint, and her antics in the middle of games mellowed. That didn't completely mitigate problems with her. She is still incredibly competitive and gets upset easily if she loses. I've tried a few other tactics since curtailing her worst impulses to varying degrees of success. We've played a lot of co-op games, which she generally sits out these days because she just doesn't enjoy them, which is, we find, it's common among really competitive players.
Hyper-competitive players.
Yeah, you don't like co-op games because he's like, I want to beat someone real, not the board. But anyway, he continues. We have tried to play less aggressive games, as some of her favorites to start with were Munchkin and Guillotine, which are both heavy take that games. And she really likes things like Tales and Games, the Hare and the Tortoise. She still wants to play her Rick and Morty Munchkin more often than not. I'm not familiar with Tales and Games, but I'm guessing that's a little bit more family friendly, where Rick and Morty's Munchkin is not. Some tips I have learned from several years of figuring out how to make the family game nights work. So, play a game that everyone enjoys. Don't go into a game that only the table flipper or one of the others in the group likes.
Yeah.
So it's like, I like Munchkin and I'm going to, you know, play. Well, okay, you might like it.
It's but... like you've taken your family hostage at that point.
Exactly.
No one is having fun.
Yep. If the game is aggressive or has a lot of take that, let the table flipper be the first one to make an attack move. So I like this as... It's sort of kind of a Band-Aid more than a solution.
Yeah.
But if we're playing with Kitty and her first move is like, now she plays the monster and kills our warriors, game on.
Yeah,
now exactly. Now we go. And she can't really be that upset because at least once she knows that she gave us a red cube.
Yeah.
And that, I'm going to say red cube, green cube. Like, red cube was bad and green cube, I did something good. Right. But once you know you've drawn that, first blood.
Like that... insurance commercial where they talk about like the past and the future, good things and bad things.
Yes.
We always think that, you know, more good things are going to happen, but yep. Prepare for the bad things.
Insurance. But I still like that idea. Like I say, it's just a Band-Aid, but as long as, you know, if it's a take that game, it's going to happen pretty early in the game anyway. So I think that can actually work a little bit.
Yeah.
He says to avoid trigger games, not all aggressive or take that games are bad, but there can be certain ones which there is no way to avoid bad reactions. I want to get to Werewolf just briefly. So Werewolf is one of those games. Kitty does not want to play this at all.
I hate any game where there's accusations.
Right. But because it gets very, very emotional.
And personal.
And very personal. So I've played games of Werewolf where we as a group were just livid with each other. Like, to the point where, I mean, this is a game. One of us has a card that says Werewolf on it. All of us are accusing everyone else of doing it. Everyone's getting so upset they're being accused, even though that is the game. So it's like, for some people, that is a trigger game. For me, I love Werewolf. I will not play it with certain people because yeah. I know they will get more emotional than I'm comfortable with, or they will make me more emotional than I'm comfortable with. So I like what they're saying about trigger games. His final point here is be patient. Gaming with a table flipper at times can be trying, but if you are willing to work on it, you can find great persons to have at your table. I would say everybody has a good sportsman in them, or sports person, or sportswoman, whatever the term may be. It really is like learning good sportsmanship. You know, that's what losing is. Losing gracefully is a skill that we all need to learn and practice.
Yep.
And winning gracefully. Bad winners are almost worse than bad losers.
Yeah,
that's the worst. And luckily, none of us do that.
Yeah,
that's it's a very immature mark of, yes. You know, and kids tend to do this more than yes. adults.
Friendly trash talk's okay.
Yeah,
but legitimate, you know, man, rubbing you're so dumb. Gloating. How could you have made that move?
Oh, the worst.
He goes on, I just want to finish this up because it is really good. So most recently, I have used Mintworks to introduce my youngest to worker placements and Euro games. Mintworks is a game that comes in the size of an Altoid tin. So it's like a little worker placement game. She really likes them. I have so far taught her Stone Age, Lords of Waterdeep, Dark Minions, The Brown Service. The best part is she is very competitive with these games, but I haven't had a single negative outburst at the table. I can't wait to try out Barbarians, the Invasion, when it gets here in a few weeks, as this will be most advanced Euro she will have gotten into. So, he says, great topic. Can't wait to hear his talk. Hope, no, now you have. but I think, Kitty, you were mentioning before we turned on that one of the reasons you like point salad games is because you can't calculate who's winning as easily. So your emotions are easily more maintained.
Yeah, I'm more focused on gameplay, on what I'm doing, instead of who's winning, what's the competitive angle I have. I feel like I'm optimizing my moves based on what I can do, not on this like perceived, am I going to win?
Yep.
Thing going on.
Yep. And I think a lot of these games he mentions are those types of games where they, you don't really know who's winning until the very end when you tally all the points.
Yeah.
And a lot of the point salad games and even and the worker placement games tend to have very little take that. You can optimize your own move based on the board state, but you're not worried about, you know, someone else messing with your strategy as much.
I wonder if there was an element in creating Euro games where that was almost the intention.
Like 100%.
Right?
Yeah,
it must have been.
The history of Euro games, and I think we touched on this way back when we were doing like a Euro versus Ameritrash or something like that. But the reason why they're Euro games is because after World War II, people were done with fighting. They didn't want conflict anymore. So these games came out that were like points and such. So yeah, that is essentially why Euro games are the way they are. Is so you don't have this super hyper competitive between. There's no elimination. Like up until Euro games, like games were elimination. And that's when you're playing a 4-hour game of Monopoly and you're the first person out. Yeah, that's not cool. There's no fun in that.
Of course. Yeah. Europeans are the best.
Well, maybe. On that note. All right. So this is where we end our show. Try to keep these things to an hour. They always go over a few minutes, but that's because the last part of the show is a few minutes long. If you want to follow us, you can follow us at Facebook. We're at @TabletopGameTalkPodcast. We're at Twitter at @TabletopGameTLK. And you can follow me directly. I am Game Master Chris on Twitter. If you want to leave us an iTunes reviews, we love them. It's one of our favorite things to do is to look at them. And when I see new ones, I will mention them here and say thank you, thank you, thank you. If you want to support us on Patreon, tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. That helps us with all the hosting fees and the giveaways and the shipping and, you know, generally just says
Chris's Kickstarter habit.
My Kickstarter habit. And it also gets you entries into our other contests. You don't have to email me or anything like that. If you do, you still get a bonus entry. And if you currently, if you email us and put a show topic in there, you get 2 bonus entries. For the rest of this, we let the Brit talk because everyone likes a Brit.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. Remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons: Emil Giljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, you mess with a bull, you get the horns, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzwell, and Jordan Livingston. Until next week, when we talk about game vocabulary, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. I've had a couple people ask, like, wait a minute, what do you mean with take that? So next episode, we're just going to go down all the vocab.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when we started this, I had no idea half the stuff you guys were talking about.
Yeah. And you still don't.
Yeah, it's great.
Can I call it a gamer glossary?
Gamer glossary? All right. Oh,
like
that's
good. Alliteration.
Yeah. Episode 76, the gamer glossary. Done.